From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Well, our connection this hour was made last week in schools across the region where students packed in for their first days of the semester. The new session can be an exciting time for people. Going back to school can be fun. It can also come with a lot of stress, anxiety, and other concerns. According to the journal The Lancet, the mental health of young people has been declining steadily over the past 20 years. Now, the pandemic, of course, was a major factor. But as we'll discuss this hour, global trends related to social and political issues, concerns about violence, even nihilism among young adults have pushed the issue into what the journal calls a dangerous phase. So as the new school year begins, what can adults do to help support young people with their mental and emotional health? What can school districts do? What do younger adults and teenagers, what do they need? What are they asking for? We're going to talk to people about what they're experiencing themselves, and let me welcome them now. First of all, Melanie Funches is back with us here. Mel is Director of Mental Health and Wellness at Common Ground Health. Nice to see you as always.
Great to see you too, Evan.
Welcome back here to Maddie Funches. Madeline is a sophomore majoring in sociology at MCC, Monroe Community College. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And Hayden Smith is a sophomore at East High School. Hello, Hayden. Thanks for being on the program.
Hey, thank you.
Mel, what's on your mind as students go back to school in particular, and you do work on mental health every day of the year, what's on your mind most when you think about kids going back to school? I'd say kids, young adults.
Yeah. You know, when I look at our young people and as they head back to school, not all things are created equal. And we as the adults in the lives of young people need to make sure that we're listening to our young people, to what their individual needs are, and not supposing that we already know what they need. And to really be mindful, be observant, be curious with our young people, because this summer was a lot for a lot of our young people. A lot of things happened in our community. And as we're going back, I just want to make sure that we as the adults are tuned into them and not as much into ourselves.
How much change do you see happening in schools that are at least talking more about mental health? I mean, like, I was in high school, oh my goodness, 30 years ago now, and I don't think that there was a whole lot of talk in this way.
There wasn't. And I mean, I went to high school earlier than you did, and we just didn't talk about it at all, right? But what is amazing about this generation of young people is not only are they don't have the stigmas that we had around talking about mental health, but they also have language. And they have the language and are very comfortable with using the language. And that's why I'm really pressing in and help getting adults to be able to become comfortable, because the young people will come to us and tell us, I am feeling anxious. I am not okay. And we have to, as the adults in the lives of young people, be ready to hear that and ready to respond in ways that let them know that it's okay to not be okay, and that I may not know exactly what to do, but I'm here for you.
I'm thinking of a couple. I don't want to go in any one particular direction. We're going to let students here kind of take the course this hour. And of course, there's a lot of things that go into why anyone might be struggling with mental health. I am thinking about violence. I'm thinking about the fact that, you know, one of the first days back to school in this country, in Georgia, there was a mass shooting, of course. But here in Rochester, there was a mass shooting this summer at Maplewood. I mean, at a park, people are barbecuing. And we'll talk this hour about how that affects people. But, you know, I graduated, I think you as well, before Columbine, before some of this stuff felt, I do not want to use the word normal, but I mean, it's sometimes a school shooting doesn't even make much of a headline anymore.
No, because we have normalized something that is abnormal. You know, when things happened over and over again, and that's something that we have to watch for. It is never normal for a young person's life to be sucked out of the air like this. And what we have to understand about Rochester is that Rochester, we act like we're a big city, but we're a big town. And there's only like 3 or 4 degrees separation between any of our kids. So, for example, in Maplewood Park, one of the young ladies who died went to school with one of my children, you know, and knew one of my children. And in each of these things, these kids, they all know each other. You know, they say, well, they didn't live in my neighborhood, or they didn't, but between the schools and the sports and all the things, all these kids know each other, or there's only maybe 2 degrees of separation between them. So we can't anymore, especially with social media and all the technology being what it is, we can no longer hide and say, well, that's not my neighborhood. That's not my kid. That's not anyone we know, because these kids all know each other. And they're all connected.
Yeah. And, you know, my one thing that I hear people say is, well, if we're talking about mental health more than ever, why is it worse? Is the act of talking about it constantly, you know, making people feel like it's worse than it is? Are we not raising, you know, resilient kids? And yeah, I mean, somebody emails me every time we talk about it on this program, and I'm not a professional. That's
right.
But I don't know how to answer that.
Well, it's not that us talking about it makes it worse. What it is, because we're talking about it, all the things that were hidden before are now being talked about. All the things that were whispered in corners and talked about in the dark, and people did maladaptive, you know, coping things, are all being brought to the fore. So it's been this bad for a while, but there was not a safe and open place for people to talk about it. And these young people, in the immense bravery and intelligence that they have stepped forth to say, look, we're not going to do like our older brothers and sisters. We're not going to do like our parents did. We're going to talk about this and get the help that we need so we can grow. And so we need, just like this is Suicide Prevention Month. And what we always talk about is talking about suicide is not going to put suicidal ideation on somebody, right? Make someone think about committing suicide. The same thing with mental health, with people who are struggling with their mental health, right? Us talking about it is the best thing that we can do, because we then, just like we're talking about people are normalizing mass shootings, we need to normalize being able to say these things and normalize getting help, and normalize that help looks a whole lot of different ways in different situations for different people.
Well, Maddie, how are you doing these days?
I think I'm doing well. School just started, the semester started. I feel very confident in my classes. That's this year. This is my third try at college. When you graduate high school, they don't tell you that you may have to stop again and start again. And I think that has a large impact on college students' mental health, specifically going back to school. I think time is a big deceptor that we experience. I think that I graduated 2019 of high school. I should be graduated by college by 2023. We're in 2024. We've experienced a global pandemic. We've experienced things that we weren't planning for, and that can make a lot of students feel set back. And I think there's not a lot of resource for the students that do feel like they're constantly making up for lost time. I think that makes the semester more complicated. I think it means more than getting A's and B's now. It means having a higher GPA, shooting for higher goals. It means trying to find other means in life that make you happy outside of school. I think a lot of students forget that we're supposed to be having extracurriculars. We should be having hobbies. Maybe we started the gym. And I think that a lot of it starts with, we have a lot of fancy words and buzzwords that we use in terms of mental health. I think on a micro level, that just looks like allowing students the space to feel comfortable to speak, allowing, you know, not necessarily needing a specific kind of wording. There's nothing, no magical word that you need to say that's going to let me know that you're struggling. I would like to just, I can see you struggling, and that's enough for me. You don't have to fall at my knees and tell me it's all bad and the world's burning right now. I see that this is hard for you. A good example is I make smoothies every day. That's something that I do. I start the gym. I have a personal trainer and I make smoothies every day. And today I was all out of raw honey. And that's a very small thing, very, very small thing. But for a girl that has school full time and is working and is trying to build a life bigger than herself, it's a bigger thing. It's a bigger issue. So support for me looks like getting me some raw honey, because I probably need it.
See, identifying the small thing, big things.
Mm-hmm.
When you started, you said that in your mind, this is a try three at college.
Mm-hmm.
The first time, what was it that made that a challenge when you look back at it now?
Transitions are really hard. Transitions, starting anything new can be very difficult. I think I needed to know more about self. Your success in the world a lot of times is attached to the definition, the way you see yourself, how you identify yourself. I think when you're young, coming straight out the gate into a grown-up world, you don't know who you are. So you don't know what you stand for. When you're going to school, specifically, school is something that it's a long process. Any mentality to get from A to B, to get from one point of life to the next one, it's a process. For you to be able to get through a process, you got to know a couple things about yourself. And when you first start school, you don't know anything about yourself. So it can make it difficult. It can make it something where you're juggling your identity, you're juggling relationships with your family, and you're juggling classes. There are probably things that other students have learned that you don't know. I went to school in the South. I went to high school in the North. The curriculums are different. I was a lot further behind a lot of other students than I was, and that made me insecure as a student. So trying to balance social and emotional and academic is very difficult.
Is there, you know, not to be cliche here, but in a sense, you know, here you are in your sophomore year now at MCC, and part of what you're doing, at least to my ears, sounds like kind of collecting that wisdom, learning from that. Is there something that, you know, you kind of look back and think, you know, this might have gone differently if I knew X?
Time is just that. It's a made-up concept. It's not a thing. I don't have to. The way my brain chooses to learn is the way it's supposed to. There is no right way for a brain to learn. There is no right amount of time for you to accomplish the things that you want. You are the only person that has to be satisfied with what you do when you lay down at night. And as long as you are proud of yourself, you're already there. The goal is the journey. The goal is not the end result.
What do you think over there, Melanie?
Snap, 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 right? But that's it. You know, we have set all of these things. Like we say, you have to finish college in 4 years, right? For these young people, like between 2019 and now, there was a global pandemic.
Yeah, it was very disruptive.
You know,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
It's, I mean, all kinds of things happened. And for when you, and we can teach our young people that each of their journeys is their journey, not ours, but theirs. And as long as they're feeling comfortable or feeling that they can do it and they feel that they have the supports they need, let them define it. And that's how you get to wellness.
Maddie, when you are not going to bed at night feeling good about yourself or feeling proud about yourself, is it because you feel like you get caught up in things that, or maybe you used to? It sounds like you're a little freer now of not getting caught up in things that used to weigh you down.
It's a lifelong journey. I think I struggle with similar things that I struggled 4 years ago with. Maybe I'm struggling with them differently. Maybe they look different. I think we all develop coping mechanisms that may serve us at one point that don't serve us later. And we find ourselves adjusting and shedding those things. And right now I'm in a period of life where I am definitely shedding a lot of the things that I believe. When I'm not feeling great, a lot of times I call my mom first. I think getting to the age, I'm 23 years old, calling your mom is like when you're 5 and you learn how to dial those numbers, that's like a portal to all the help you might ever need. And I think when you start getting older and you start having experiences that your parents don't have, that changes things. So now I'll call my mom for an emotional support. My mom can't necessarily change or tell me anything new about the situation I'm in. She can suggest that I lay down and take a nap. Maybe I should watch a movie or a show that I really enjoy. And I try to remember that life is a lot bigger. I'm not on this earth to pay the bills, to get the classes done and die. There's so much more. The joy that I feel when I sit on the couch that I paid for feels really good. When I watch the shows that I enjoy, when I get to be the creative that I am, when I paint flower pots on campus at the Student Life Center, I realize that life is so much bigger. The world is bigger. But on the days that I feel low, I have to keep that in mind. It's very, very much easier said than done.
I think everybody's got a raw honey in their lives, a little component of a daily routine that if you knock it out, a lot of things can go kind of get off kilter.
Absolutely.
How do you now, Maddie, you know, you're going through school now. They're going to give you deadlines sometimes for might be there's a test coming up or a paper you have to write. Listen to this guy talking about college. It's been so long. I think that it still works largely the same way.
Mm-hmm. But it's scary.
Well, when you think about those deadlines, but you also think about the way that deadlines used to bring you down or affect you, or the way that the concepts of time felt overwhelming at times in the past. How do you square now a new approach and still say, all right, I mean, I get it. Like the expectation is this has to get done or this has to get done. But I'm not going to let it sort of twist me up the way that it used to. Does that make sense?
Yes. I think I've learned that I am all that I will be already. I've already arrived. I think this idea, because of capitalism, other social constraints we experience, there's supposed to be a large difference between where we are now and where we're going to be. I am everything I already should be. There's nobody more capable of me getting through the classes the way I should more than me. I have all the tools. I am not great at math. I used to be a physics major. I'm a sociology major now. Very wide swing because I'm not great at math. Right now, I'm
not
in a second, you know what I mean? I'm in a second math class that I've already kind of taken before. It's my second stats. I don't love it. It's stressful for me. I'm in an academic center getting help sometimes once or twice a week. It can be stressful. But then I realized that if not me, then who? There are people who haven't had to climb the mountains that I've had to climb that are doing this math with their eyes closed. If not me, then who? It's just sometimes the things that we think are corny, the way our parents teach us to believe in ourselves, you as an adult will be surprised how much that matters, how much your sense of self matters in getting hard tasks done.
Talking to Maddie Funches, Mel is here. Melanie is Director of Mental Health and Wellness at Common Ground Health. Hayden Smith is a sophomore at East High School. And Hayden, how are things in your world? How are you these days?
I'd say I'm doing pretty fine. School just started. I'm really excited for it, honestly. Personally, I enjoy school simply because I like being with friends. I feel like most feel the same way. I know that a lot of people who I'm friends with don't feel the same because a lot of people struggle, especially because of the pandemic, struggle with social anxiety, which I somewhat do too myself. But I feel like that's been a major pop-up, and a lot of people have been realizing that they have simply just because of the start of school. As we were saying earlier, that starting something different as a new norm is very hard, and it can cause, like, I feel like it can cause new upbruts. It's hard going from staying in the house maybe during the summer, doing your own thing, not hanging out with friends a lot, to going into a school with over 1,000 people in it. And it can cause a lot of hardships, honestly. I know a lot of people who struggle with talking to people and really getting in there and enjoying themselves. And I feel like that's just something that we really have to work on as ourselves and as parents to help support students. It's definitely a big struggle, and it's definitely has to be worked on. Sorry.
Yeah. First of all, no apologies this hour. Now, is there something that is a regular source of anxiety for you that might trip you up that you've recognized? Is there anything, one thing in that category for you?
I'm an overthinker. I overthink a lot. Whenever something's on my mind, if it doesn't, you know, if something doesn't change or if I don't get any info on it, it really does really come at me, and I'll think about it all night. I won't be able to sleep. It really does almost eat me alive, and I really, it really does just, you know, tick at me.
And so what do you do?
What I do, I'm an overthinker, but I love sports. I play basketball. Whenever I'm overthinking, the best thing to silence my mind is always working on myself or playing basketball, working out. I feel like the improvement of self is the improvement of mind, and nothing else can beat that.
You right-handed?
Yeah.
You work on that left hand?
Absolutely.
If it was you and me one-on-one, can you take me left-handed?
You wouldn't even touch the ball. You're a self-checker.
See, that is a great outlet for you, it sounds like. And does it typically work? Do you typically, you know, get to a point where you go, okay, what was eating me up before, what I was overthinking before, I've brought it down a notch, I can deal.
Yeah. After, you know, playing basketball, working on myself, it really does calm your brain and really think and help you think what you were really thinking, and, like, it helps you see another passage or narrative or side of what is really going on. With school starting up, I was really scared that it was just going to be not the same how it was last year. Last year was really fun, and, you know, I enjoyed being able to be with my friends. But with new people in the school and some of my friends going into other schools, it really kind of made me feel like it wouldn't be as good or as right as it was last year. And what I did personally was I played basketball, and after, it really calmed my brain and helped me think, like, in the end, we're all here for one thing, and that's just to better our education. And I feel like there's more to it than that also, but just find enjoyment in yourself and others. A lot of things that I see also is students and scholars, young-minded people, they tend to like almost take someone else's personality. And that's a common thing because in the end, there's people out there who push the narrative that you have to be someone else than yourself. And in reality, you're perfectly fine being who you are. You really have to find self-love and enjoyment in yourself. And don't try being anyone else that you're not, Afia.
I want to connect some of these threads that I'm hearing because, you know, you heard Maddie talk about the challenge, and especially when you're 18, 19 years old, of realizing, like, you know, you may not feel like you are a fully formed self. You're learning who you are. You're learning what your values are. And, you know, Hayden is talking about the pressures to adopt somebody else's personality, to take on somebody else's values or do things that they want you to do. And you feel that pressure because people naturally want to fit in. We want to be part of things. And I think it sounds to me, tell me if I'm wrong here, Hayden, that was made even harder when you couldn't feel all that connected during this pandemic. During the pandemic summer, people can't see each other physically. They weren't talking as much. People were kind of isolated or shutting down more. And then all of a sudden it's like, well, who am I? And like, what am I connected to? What can you take me through it? Because you were what, 12, 13 years old?
Yeah.
What was that like for you?
Well, personally, it helped. Well, it didn't help. I'm saying that I really struggled personally finding who I am. It took a lot of support from my own parents and my own friends really finding out who I am and reminding me who I am. I see myself as someone who's very outgoing and also very mindful of others, who really take initiative when it's needed and who really enjoys helping others also. So whenever I really lost who I was, it really was a struggle because sometimes I didn't have people there since the pandemic. I couldn't go to my friend's house and maybe talk about them and just like really understand and get rooted to where I was. And I feel like everyone struggled with that personally because, I mean, everyone really does have struggles and needs, and not being met with those struggles and like needs, it makes it really hard.
Now that we're past that, what I want to do after we take our only break of the hour, we're going to come back and we're going to ask our guests, what do you need from adults now? What do you need them to understand? Whether it is parents, family members, teachers, people in a school community, people in a mental health community. And I'm also curious to know what Melanie Funchess sees in a society that, you know, has spent, I think, a couple of decades debating, are we not medicated enough? Are we over-medicated? Are we turning to different quote-unquote fixes? And is it working? And how do you know? Now, I mean, I'm not going to ask Melanie to solve every little bit of psychiatry, but I'm curious to know about an approach that says, what are the different tools? And does the balance feel right here? Does this feel like we're on a good path, especially for teenagers, younger adults, you know, kids even younger than Hayden and Maddie, who are really dealing with some very, very hard stuff, especially post-pandemic. So we'll come back, we'll take our only break, and we'll continue the conversation on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, my guest is the director of the Global South Program at the Quincy Institute. Sarang Shador is in Rochester visiting the World Affairs Council's local chapter. He's talking about the Global South and how the United States interacts with the Global South. He says, we used to trade more. We used to be more of a leader, and we've ceded a lot of that ground to China. India is making a play. What should the United States do? We're going to talk about it next hour. Welcome back to Connections here. We had a buzz in studio during this brief break here. Just a lot of great conversation already this hour. With our guest, you're hearing Hayden Smith, a sophomore at East High School, Madeline Funchess. Maddie is a sophomore majoring in sociology at MCC. Melanie Funchess is here, the director of mental health and wellness at Common Ground Health. A lot of wisdom from these young folks here that you're hearing.
They're absolutely so wise. And that's why, you know, a lot of the work that I do is around helping adults to be able to hear, because if you come, you know, I'm Gen X, right? You know, we were the thing that children should be seen and not heard, right? And I'm like trying to flip that completely and say, no, listen to them. They are tough, right? And they know. And the thing is, like I said before, not only do they know, they have language that no generations before them really had and are comfortable using it. So, like, yeah. they're everything.
Well, and I think as a Gen Xer myself, I think if we, and I'm always going to put a caveat here. I'm going to generalize now, and I understand there's exceptions everywhere. But every generation kind of looks at the next generation and thinks, well, kids these days, or, you know, they're doing it a little differently than I did it, so that must be wrong. And, you know, sometimes you might really feel like, hey, why are they doing it this way? That doesn't make sense. And sometimes you might look at what the next generation is doing, or the next generation, or the next, and say, there's a lot of wisdom in what they're doing. They are charting a new course. They're calling out injustice. They are fighting for things that I sort of felt like weren't attainable. And what you are describing in sort of for the Gen Xers, yeah, you growing up, it's seen and not heard. It was like, you know, hey, you're on your own for a while. And so I think as a result, Melanie, mm-hmm. some Gen Xers think, hey, I had to deal. We didn't have this language on mental health. We didn't have these conversations. As a result, they assume that Gen Alpha, but also Gen Z, is not resilient. That all they want to do is talk about mental health. It's too much. They should just suck it up, just like we did. And again, I'm generalizing, mm-hmm. but it's this idea that like, well, that's not tough. That's not resilient. You don't see it that way.
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, yes, we were the feral generation that drank from the water hose, and they had to put on the thing. Do you know where your children are? Because wasn't nobody checking for us, right? You know, I get all those things. But at the same time, when we became parents, what did a lot of us do? We leaned in to make sure that our kids knew that we knew that they had feelings. We did this. We created this in a lot of ways. We set the seeds for this. And so we can't expect that we set the seeds for something, and when the thing we set the seeds for grows, that we look at it like, oh, why did we get apple tree? Because we planted apple seeds, right? And so we need to embrace what our young people are bringing, because they've got to see things that we never thought, like you just said, things that we thought were impossible. It's only impossible till you do it. And so they've been able to not only see it, but do it. And we need to trust in what we put in them, you know, and what they took it, and they took it and went way, way, way beyond. These Gen Z is just, I marvel, you know, and all I want to do is make sure that we're able to continue to buoy them so that they can go as high and as far as they can go, because they've got this. They know what this is. We just got to catch up.
So, Madeline, I'll start with you on this question. What do you think your generation needs most from, you're an adult. I say adult, but that's you. You're an adult. Yeah. But from, whether it's your teachers, people who are in charge of schools, parents, but also, you know, caregivers, an authority community. What do you want people to understand more? What do you need most?
I think anybody that's older than anyone usually has something that they would like to share with people who are younger than them. And I think a lot of times that ends up always coming from a really good place. But sometimes it can be we impose our fears on younger people. We impose maybe the things that we couldn't overcome, obstacles that we couldn't see past, and tell them, when you get there, you'll experience this. Maybe don't take that route. Maybe don't do that thing. Maybe don't say that thing. And I think it's up to adults to realize that your presence is enough. I think to support somebody doesn't always look like being the one that, you needed matches, or I bought the matches. You needed this, so I brought this. Sometimes it's not about that. Sometimes you were there, and that's important. Sometimes you listened, and that was important. I think understanding that, it helps. I think sometimes people who are older give this false sense of, because you're older, you may know. I should be able to call you and you'll know. We don't see each other as our experiences, rather just the number that we are. And I think if we can begin to see each other and define each other by the experiences that we've had, then maybe conversations will be better. And I think we can bridge a better, that larger gap that we experience between younger people and older people.
I want to talk more about this idea of just sometimes just your presence is enough. Mm-hmm. Do you think there are times where adults feel like they have to not only be present, but they have to take control of something, whether it's a parent on the sideline of a Little League game or somebody who just can't kind of stay silent and participate, someone who's going to see a school play, someone who's, you know, wants to stand up for their kid, but then isn't willing to let a kid fight their own battles. Do you see that at all?
Of course. I think parents parent out of fear. I think that's just what it, I think every child should know that. Every growing teenager and child should begin to learn that. It's one of the hardest lessons that you will learn. A lot of us learn it the hard way. Parents parent out of fear. You know, you're an extension of them. I made you with my body, and now you're here and you exist. What a strong love and connection that is to another human being, right? And I think sometimes, you know, the same way too much of any good thing is not great. It's the same way, I think, to allow and trust in a natural process, trust in yourself as a parent. I think students need that more than anything. We know what you taught us. We know what you said when we got in the car every single day after school. We know that when we get in the store, we're not supposed to touch anything or ask for anything. We're very clear as to how things work, right? Parents say they have repetitive natures. That's my point, is that they say things and they put it in us and they hope that when we leave their nest, when we go outside, we'll have those things. And I think a lot of times when they see you doing it on their own, they're scared that they didn't do a great job. So they're constantly reminding you and telling you over and over again, hey, and I think students don't always need to hear that. I know that even if I told my mom I was going to do X, Y, and Z, I know that when I get there and I'm in a period where I feel pressure, I know what my mom told me and I'm going to do just that.
There's an irony here because a couple months ago, we had a conversation about a couple of big new surveys that came out that had a lot of people talking. And those surveys found that recent college grads and Gen Z adults were bringing, in pretty alarming numbers, were bringing their parents to job interviews. And I was sitting there going, like, there's something I'm missing here about this, right? This has been on my mind because I happen to have seen advanced copies of the scripts of producer Megan Mack's comedy group that they're performing at the Fringe Festival coming up. And there's a sketch in there that turns this on its head. I don't want to give away too much here. And they're great, by the way. Everyone should go see Megan's group. But I'm thinking about this because what Maddie's describing here is reflected in the irony of those surveys. Those surveys hit, and what did, I'm going to probably overgeneralize, what did the Fox News and everybody else say? Well, look how soft Gen Z is. They got to bring their parents to job interviews. What was the reality? Well, the reality is that it's almost never happening in in-person interviews. It does happen sometimes in online interviews or in Zoom interviews, which people are doing sometimes. Sometimes a parent is sitting there. But the story is, it's not Gen Z begging their parents to come to interviews. It's parents who are demanding to go with them because they're having a hard time letting go. It's my generation going, well, I'm coming with you. And it's often, you know, the kids, the young adults saying like, no, you're not. And it's like, no, I'm coming with you. And of course, it's Gen Z who takes all the heat. Gen Z has to be told, you're soft. You can't go to an interview without your parent. When it's like, it's the parents can't let go.
It's us.
It's us. The call's coming from inside the house, Mel. It's us.
It's us.
Sometimes that's like that. And that's hard for parents because they want to let go. They want to do right by. But what I'm hearing her describe is, you know, like, I want you to be there. But, like, you know, understand, like, we hear you. We got this.
You know, that's it. You know, and if people haven't figured it out yet, Maddie is my daughter, right? And I am the man. Like, I'm guilty, right? I know what she's been taught. She is a brilliant young woman. She's a fully grown woman. She went, you know, 1,300 miles away from home to go to school, right? On her own and took care of herself. Like, she's here, right? But at the same time, she has to tell me on a regular basis, Mom, I got this. Mom, I got this. You know, because it's my fear, you know, and thank God we've been able to have the content because she'll say, Mom, I don't have your traumas. Let me just go and live. Let me go. Can I live? You know, and I've got to pull back and say, okay, Melanie, you can do this. You know, and she jokes now about, you know, how raising these parents nowadays is tough because we just don't know how to act, right? Because we're being extra. But it's true because we have got to trust the job that we've done because they've got it.
You know she loves you, though.
Yeah, something like that,
that's,
right?
That's coming from a big-time place of love. Mm-hmm. It can be really tough. But
love does not have to smother.
I'm with you. I am not always great at that. I've never, you know, my boy's 12 now, and I'm not great at when he is struggling, when he's hurting, mm-hmm. when he's suffering. And there are times where it's like, you got to go through this. You got to learn this lesson. And, you know, sometimes as a parent, you want to take away that pain immediately. Now, there's a fine line, though, and I want you to talk about this before I turn to Hayden for his prescriptions for adults here. There's a fine line between saying, I can't control everything. I got to let you live your life. I got to trust you when you say you've heard me. I can't come in and eliminate every little piece of pain. But you do have to recognize when they're hurting and asking for help, and understanding how not to belittle that ask and affirm it. And I view those as different things. How do you see it?
For me, what I've learned, and this is not just me as a professional, but this is me as a parent, mm-hmm. is that I'm the net. I have four children, and they all have to, I have like lots of kids, but my four that I birthed, you know, they have to walk that rope. And I have to trust that they know how to balance. I have to trust all things, but I also understand that if they fall off, that I am that net that's going to catch them and push them back up to get back up on that rope and keep walking. And that they know that the net is there. So even if they, because sometimes you need to fall. The greatest lessons come in the fall. My job is to make sure that they don't get hurt too bad in the fall. Mm-hmm. And that's it. Because that's how you can learn and grow. Because if you never fall and you never hurt and it never happens, where do you build the resilience, right? So it's up to us as the adults and lives of young people to be the net. Or like I talk about the adult protective shield. To, you know, that you have to go through certain things, but just keep the unnecessary fooly-wang and shenanigans away. You know, and that's it.
Well, let me ask Hayden Smith, sophomore at East High School. What do you need most from the adults in your life?
Well, one thing that I've seen from going to school is they want us to, you know, answer questions such as, like, how are we doing mentally? Are we struggling with depression or anything like that? But the main thing that I've seen is that I didn't know what depression or anxiety was until just about a year ago, and I'm a sophomore in high school now. So I've seen that they've want us to answer these questions without even educating us on what these things are. What is depression? What is anxiety? And that's really hard to answer if you don't know what that is. And I just recently learned out what anxiety was from a friend just about a month ago. And I realized that it's something that's really, I realized that all of my friends, mostly all of them, actually struggle with anxiety.
How do you describe what anxiety is now?
I describe anxiety as a feeling in yourself, almost as if, like, almost overthinking, but not overthinking at the same time. It's more like a feeling that you get in yourself that really almost grabs you and holds you, and it makes you feel like almost worried about everything. And sometimes it can cause physical aspects on you, such as like rashes, you know, maybe getting red, almost panic attacks sometimes. It can really affect you.
So I'm going to key in on this point, and I'm going to come back to the question of depression. That's another one here. But on anxiety, I relate a lot to what you said about overthinking. And I'll give you an example. I talked about, I worry about my son. Well, one of my biggest fears is, and I look, my kid is like one of the more privileged human beings who's ever been born. He's great. But as a parent, I want him to grow up in a stable world. I don't want him given everything. I just want you to have a stable life. So you can be kind to others and kind to yourself and figure out, you know, how you can contribute to the world and be happy. And that, so when news cycles hit that put me as a parent down this rabbit hole of thinking this could all go bad, you know, I start to obsess over it and I overconsume news. And I, you know, I read and then I read some more and then I look for some more. And it's the only thing I do. And I kind of curl up in this little ball on a couch and I obsess. So I'm not thinking about it, I'm overthinking, to use your phrase. That's how I relate to it. And I could feel it physically. I lose my appetite, I shake a little bit, it's hard to sleep. It is not a healthy thing. And people who care about me are really good at recognizing, hey, you need to unplug that for a bit. Like, you need to do something else. You need to find a way to break that obsession. Because this is not just thinking, this is, you're creating anxiety over something that you don't have control over.
Right.
Does that kind of relate to where you are?
Yeah.
That's exactly what I was thinking when you were describing yourself. And I'm there with you. And it can be really tough. Now you're dealing with it and you're finding ways to deal with it. You've got basketball. You've got things that you like to do that will break that obsession. In general, how do you describe depression now? You just talked about anxiety. How do you describe depression?
I see depression as almost like a void. it makes you feel like you're alone. Depression, it's almost like you're alone and you don't want to leave this loneliness almost. You don't like being alone, but you know that being alone, it feels better than being around others and not feeling right. So that loneliness almost absorbs you and it takes you in and it feels like almost a blanket, a cold blanket. But you're still in the cold almost.
And so. You're kind of stuck in it?
Yeah.
Huh.
Depression is very hard to get out of.
Okay. Melanie, what do you make of that description of depression? That's really interesting.
It's real. I've said this on the show before. I don't just work for Hair Club. I'm also a client, right? You know, I've lived with depression most of my adult life, and it's hard. It is hard, right? And it does feel like you're covered with this blanket, but you can't get warm. It feels like, you know, all these things. But at the same time, you know, being able to describe a thing. For me, I've always said if I can understand a thing, I can work through it if I know what it is. You know, and it's, you know, it's very accurate, but at the same time, it's something that it's hard to get through, and sometimes it takes a long time, but you can get through it. It's dependent on not only you yourself, it's about the people around you recognizing. Like, I remember Winnie the Pooh and all the characters, Piglet, Tigger, and all them. There's a character called Eeyore. And everybody talks about Eeyore is clinically depressed, right? But they never leave Eeyore out. Even though Eeyore may say that, you know, well, Pooh, I don't want to do that today. I'm not feeling it. Pooh and Piglet will always come and get by Eeyore and try to make sure Eeyore is included. And that is a whole thing for our young people. Like, I'm not saying our young people are Eeyore, but what I'm saying is that as we listen to them, hear them, honor what they say, and see what we can do to be supportive. Like Maddie said, just being present. You know, I may not be able to go to Hayden and pull him out of whatever he's feeling, but I can go sit next to him so he's not alone in it.
Yeah, and Melanie, how do you navigate questions that, whether it's a 15, are you 16, 15?
15.
15. A 15-year-old, a 23-year-old, a 45-year-old may have and say, I have anxiety or I deal with anxiety or I deal with depression. Here are my coping mechanisms. But is that enough? You know, do I need to go down the road of talking about medication? Like, is it chronic versus a one-off? You know, that kind of, how do we have productive conversations so we end up in the right places to get that kind of assistance?
The first thing I say that there is no one answer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for some people do use medication. Some people do changes in their diet. Some people use behavioral modifications. You know, the first key is to recognize what it is, right? And say, like I say, I struggle with depression, right? One of the things that I've done for myself is I say, when I begin to go down that road of depression, there's signs that you can see. And I share those signs with the people who care about me to say, if you start seeing this, and it goes for this amount of time, talk to a sister. Pull my coattail, you know, and that's what works for me. You know, I do take medication. You know, that was what works for me. But I would never, you know, and I've learned better and I know better, but like I would say to Maddie, this works for me. This may not work for you,
mm-hmm.
You know, and whatever you say works for you, let's try some stuff. And to find out, there's all kinds of things. Like right now, you know, we're doing these emotional emancipation circles that are circles for people of African descent to come together to be able to talk and be and hear about who we are, not in context to anybody else, but just who we are. And these are great for mental health. And, you know, and in fact, Maddie's a facilitator for circles, and she's going to be doing a circle for young people. But my thing is, that's something that can work. You know, we also have yoga that's going on in the community and breath work and all these different things. The key is for us to open up to our young people and show them all the things that are available to them and help them do like Golden Corral, Old Country Buffet. Pick the things off that will work for you and leave the rest. And it's okay to leave the rest because you don't have to eat the Brussels sprouts.
We're covering a lot of ground here. I do want to ask And everybody responds differently to this or has different thoughts about this. I don't know, Hayden, if when you go to school, do you think about violence? Do you think about school shootings? Is that on your mind?
Every day.
It is on your mind.
Absolutely. I feel like it's on everyone's mind. It's a scary thing that has definitely been popping up more in the recent year, but it's also been going on, you know, forever, honestly. And it's a scary thing to think about. I mean, having that feeling in the back of your head that there's always a chance that today could be your last just for going to school, or today could be the day that someone finally gives in and gets sick of it all. It's really something scary to think about.
I'm sorry to hear that. And in your mind, you're 15 years old. You feel like it's been going on forever. As Mel and I talked about, it was not something I thought about when I was going to school. And I mean, I'm not saying there weren't fights, there wasn't violence, you know, but pre-Columbine, which was not the first ever school shooting, but really the pre-Columbine era, it was not something that we thought about often. Mm-hmm. And I'm genuinely heartbroken that you have to even think about it. I'm sorry about that. I would try to help. I mean, I try to talk to kids who bring it up around me. Sometimes I kind of make it a crude math thing. It's like, oh my God, it's terrible to say this, but like there's tens of thousands of schools that have never had a mass shooting and didn't have a mass shooting last week. There was one in Georgia that did. It's terrible. But it's a cold, sort of crude way to think about it. I don't know that it helps. I mean, does anything help? What helps you just not focus on possible violence when you go to school?
Honestly, just staying focused and keeping yourself with the right people. I know I have a lot of friends that are also scared of the same thing that I am, and it helps being together and having a common understanding of something.
Yeah.
And keeping the right mind throughout it all. Having someone that shares common goals and also is worried about their own safety helps you make it feel like you're not alone in this. And that can always be really helpful, just as we were saying, even your own presence or someone's presence there with you can be game-changing.
You're a remarkable guy. You really are. Maddie, how do you think about this? Do you think about violence?
Do I think about violence?
Like when you're going to school or you're going to class?
To some degree, yes.
Mm-hmm.
I think violence has always been in some degree a part of my life. I think I live in a place where there are, not only is there a community, there are people, where there are people, there are sometimes violence. I think for me, I'm at the age where I've had so many different obstacles, I'm feeling a little desensitized to it all.
Mm.
I will name that. I think for me, I'm Black and woman in America. I'm no stranger to violence. I think because there are so many other statistically, like number-wise, so many other likely ways that I will experience violence in a day. I think school shootings fall further down the list, not because they're not as scary, but just because I'm already on the swivel for other things that are happening, correct? So that is the way that I interpret it.
Oh. Melanie, I'm so glad that you were able to bring this panel together at this hour. And we just got a couple of minutes, and I want to ask you what you want to leave with listeners as we think about trying to be, you know, part of a community that does right by young adults, kids, teenagers, who, you know, if you look at the data, mental health is a real challenge right now. What do you want to leave with listeners?
I want to leave with our listeners to say, you know, when we're talking with our young people, we don't have to use the buzzwords. We don't have to use the catchphrases. You know, saying, you know, what's going on for you today? What's up? How you feeling? What's happening with you, right, is enough. We don't have to say, how is your depression scale today? Is your anxiety, how are you feeling? No, we don't do that. Just get with them, say, yo, what's up with you today? How are you feeling? And be real. Share.
Care about the answer.
Care about the answer. Sit with the silence. Get comfortable with the silence to get the answer. And then share with them, like, yo, I'm feeling, my head's been on swivel all day, like da-da-da-da-da, right? Whatever it is, because real recognizes real. And for younger children, remind our children that we are there. Like, I talked about this right after the Atlanta shooting. I quoted Mr. Rogers. Look for the helpers.
Yeah.
Know and make sure our kids know that we are the helpers and who the helpers are, and that we're here and we'll go to the wall for them. And long as they know that and they know that they have that shield and they know they have that net, they can walk out on the line every day.
Always. Maddie, what's the rest of the ingredients in that smoothie?
What's the rest of the ingredients other than the raw honey, correct?
Yeah.
It's got mango, pineapple, peaches. It's got cherries. It's got sea moss and elderberry, just a bunch of cool stuff in there.
Sea moss.
And elderberry. It's a mixture that I buy from Just Juice on University.
Yeah. Oh, Just Juice. That's good stuff. I hope your smoothies are everything you need coming up here.
Thank you
that
so much.
That sounds really good, by the way.
Yeah, good.
And Hayden, if we're playing to 11, no twos and threes, all ones.
11-0.
I was going to ask you if I get one.
11-0.
I'm not getting one?
Not at all.
Listen, I may not be fast, but I can't jump. So just keep that in mind.
You're not touching the ball.
Hayden Smith is a sophomore at East. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Awesome having you. Madeline Funches, good luck to you.
Thank you
for telling your story. Great having you. Melanie Funches, we love you. Thank you for being here.
Love y'all too.
Director of Mental Health and Wellness at Common Ground Health. We've got more connections coming up in a moment.